Welcome in to another episode of That
So Cincinnati.
I was reminiscing on my former co-host Paul Daner Jr. right there. A little extra exuberant. I'm now here with my current co-host and friend, Sherry Coolidge. Sherry.
Hi, Jason.
Hi, Phil. He's back on the ones and twos. He's always here. He's Quiet Phil. I think that's what we'll start calling him. Silent Phil. We are back. We got a fun episode today. None other than Cincinnati's famed restaurateur, Jeff Ruby, as our special guest on the hot seat. We're not going to take a lot of time here in the beginning because we let Jeff go on and talk about so many different issues and topics and stuff. But the hook, as we like to call it in the news business, what's the hook for your story, was that it's the 20-year anniversary of the downtown Jeff Ruby Steakhouse. And so 1999, that opened up. And 20 years, they are celebrating this year. And so we said, hey, let's see if we can get Jeff Ruby in. And he came in and by the way, I'm just saying, I'm going ahead and talking about this in past tense. We already recorded it. So,
well, it's Jeff Ruby. And let's face it, we're on his schedule.
Right. But anyway, before we jump to Mr. Ruby and the Jeff Ruby segment, Sherry, you had a story this morning on Cincinnati.com, I guess this morning being Tuesday as we sit here and record this this week, on the ballet, the Cincinnati Ballet, moving out of the West End to basically make room. It's part of the footprint of the FC Cincinnati Stadium. And so what's the latest on that and what's going on?
You know, the Cincinnati Ballet, its home is in the West End, super close to Music Hall. But, you know, even before FC Cincinnati's stadium was a glimmer in our eye, they had been talking about having to look for some other place, either, you know, stay there and expand somewhere else. And they were really kind of starting this capital campaign to see, because they are just growing by leaps and bounds. I mean, ooh, ballet pun. And so they were looking for this space. And now, you know, it's not part of the actual FC Cincinnati Stadium site, but it is where a lot of this mixed use is supposed to be going, and the team has become their landlord. We did see a lot of heated exchanges over a year ago, kind of started, and for a couple months, and things have been quiet, but we're seeing some movement. The ballet filed some paperwork with the city. Randy Tucker covers development for us, you know, got a hold of that stuff yesterday, and it looks like they're going to have a new home in East Walnut Hills. And, you know, the ballet's pretty mum on this. It's very new that it's happening. But a source is telling us that they're going to actually move to East Walnut Hills into a big, beautiful new building.
Is that the Eden Park area?
Yes.
Yeah. What does that mean for FC Cincinnati?
You know, I think it's good news probably for everybody. There was a lot of concern about noise and parking for the ballet. I mean, it's the practice facility, and you're like, oh, okay. But that is where, you know, hundreds of children, you know, filter in and out of there for classes. I did this adorable story earlier this year about ballet moves. And, you know, like a class that, you know, helped children with disabilities. And they were really worried about, you know, what the stadium was going to, the impact it was going to be. And so this looks like to be a good resolution. I mean, the ink's not dry yet, I don't think, but this is really the first step of that. And, you know, and it is such a reminder that a stadium is really going up in the West End. This is, you know, they poured the concrete last week. This, and you're starting to see the real, you know, formation of this is happening.
Yeah, I don't think it's not a big, there's no real hand-wringing going on over this, right? I mean, there was, but I mean, it's the ballet's practice facility. We're talking about practice here. That's an Allen. Sorry, Sherry, you're not big on sports, but that's an Allen.
Oh,
former
yeah,
NBA
that's
star.
Right
Allen,
over my head.
Practice. We're talking about practice. This is where they practice. And so if they're in Eden Park area, East Walnut Hills, what's really, there's not much difference between them being there or the West End, right?
Well, I think the idea that they're growing and they're moving is, I think there's some good stories to tell on both sides here.
Perfect. Great. All right. Let's, anything else you want to add on this topic?
I don't know. Yeah, I think are we going like, oh, to have more sports references today?
Oh, no. I don't.
You have to warn me.
Sorry. I just, my mind just sort of It just randomly went there.
And I love when it's like that. All right, you know what? We got to get to Jeff. Yeah.
Yes. So let's
Jeff Ruby, not birding.
Let's bring in our pre-recorded Jeff Ruby. All right, guest segment time. Special guest segment time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. It's a pleasure to welcome in a guy who's done a lot for this city, who has the best restaurants in the world, not just Cincinnati, but in the world. Jeff Ruby, right here on the hot seat. Jeff.
Well, you've made this hot seat hotter now.
I think you and I first met in 2013 when we sat down at the precinct and did a really in-depth, very candid Q&A, and we've kept in touch ever since. And you use that photo that we did in that interview in your book and the headline as well in your face. And it was, I tell you, I look at that picture right now and it's intense, man. It is intense. And your face was the right. I did not write the headline, but it was a great headline and a great interview. And I got to know you through that. And, so thanks for doing this. And
you didn't write after 31 years of business, Jeff Ruby, still telling it like it is. That wasn't you?
I think I may have written that in the piece.
Don't deny it. You did.
We're looking forward to that because we know that's what you're going to do today.
That was, 31 years. Now here we are, 20 years. You're celebrating your 20th anniversary of being of downtown, Jeff Ruby's, of being in downtown. You've been, you've had the precinct and
then we had the waterfront.
Yep.
Then Ruby's, then Carlo and Johnny. Then we did Belterra Casino.
Then Louisville.
Yeah, Louisville. Then we did a casino in St. Louis. And we did Lexington, Nashville, Columbus.
And you, and currently now in Nashville, Columbus, Lexington.
Lexington's the most recent one. It's opened April 26th, I believe.
You worked hard on getting that one done. That took some time.
Yeah. Saddam Hussein was still alive when we signed the first. And they found him, which wasn't easy, executed him, I think they tried him and then executed. And then Bin Laden was still around too. They found him, which was even more difficult, and killed him. And I got to meet the guy and come to know the guy that killed him. He had his wedding rehearsal thing at our place in Nashville, and I gave the wedding speech or whatever. And all of that time, there were leases being redone, and Lexington was being redesigned, and all those years.
And here we are.
All those years.
And here you are. Sherry's got a laundry list of questions for you, so I want to allow her to get to those questions, and let's.
But as restaurants go, I mean, are they like your children, and you love them all equally, or do you have a favorite?
Well, every day someone says, "Which is your favorite restaurant?" I compare that. I said, "That's like asking me which one of my three kids is my favorite kid." If I had a favorite. And I went public and just told one person, this place is my favorite. And then it gets out to the other employees at the other restaurants, and they're offended. Okay. Oh, I thought, that's not where we work. Why is that place his favorite, or whatever? It wouldn't be good for the employees to know that they're not my favorite restaurant. And just like if I had a favorite of my three kids, how would you want your two kids, the other two kids, to hear that, That's not good. The truth of the matter is my favorite restaurants are like my kids. My favorite one is the one that's behaving the best that day.
Okay.
So
my favorite's the precinct. So I'll say what
Most people say that.
I like the downtown one for Potatoes Anna.
Yeah.
Like that Potatoes Anna is important to my Jeff Ruby's meal.
Precinct from everywhere all over the country I go, most people like the precinct. That's their favorite. Some people say the precinct steak is still better than the other steak, and which I don't know how that can be, but whatever. And it was the first place they went to, and that's where their favorite is, what the original, I think. And it's, but there's they're all done differently, and so especially when three in the same town, I want them different, so that you can have a different ambiance at each place. But the steaks are the same at all the places. The rest of the menu varies, but
see what people think about Jeff Ruby's, they think of steak. But I'll tell you, and I'm not just saying, I would say this if you weren't here. I think you have the best ice cream of anyone, and I also think you have the best coffee. And I don't know how.
Oh, it's good to hear. The coffee's been an ongoing issue with me, and my daughter would be glad to hear that. I'll make sure she doesn't listen to this podcast because she said, I told you so.
I mean, but if you're
here. The ice cream, we spend a lot of time. We make our own ice cream. The cookies and cream is.
That's what I'm talking about.
Nobody's better. And
sorry, Graters.
So I think we're greater than Graters when it comes to the cookies and cream. That's all. But they do a great job. And
yes, absolutely.
Their ice cream's great. But we do the cookies and cream. We do a lot. We do popcorn ice cream, pastette. We do every,
I've only had the cookies and cream because I'm.
But it's good.
Because Jeff Ruby's is a treat. And when you go there, you got to get the cookies and cream as your dessert. So shameless plug, whatever. I don't care. You by the way, before we jump to some other questions, this must be a big deal here, Jeff, because you drove the bus. The bus is parked out front of the Enquirer building right now.
Wrong. I didn't drive the bus. I have a driver.
You're a driver. I know.
I have a hard time.
You rolled up on the Enquirer building in the bus.
That's because I have a hard time driving a car, let alone a bus, okay? And I just backed. I got a new house. I haven't moved in yet. I haven't navigated the driveway yet. Just the other day, and I backed my Bentley into the mailbox. $2,500. Boom. The one time I got a drive.
I feel so sorry for you.
I had a bad back for so long that I couldn't walk. I couldn't do anything, and I certainly couldn't drive. So finally, after a few months, I drive for the first time in months from my house to Ruby's. I turned left on 7th Street, which is a one way, I should know, going the wrong way. I have to go to 8th and come around. I turned left on 7th Street and was going the wrong way.
Plenty of people do that. If you drive downtown, I always try to be kind.
But I've been here so many years. My restaurant's on that street, and it was just, So I have what I call a Secretary of Transportation, and two of them actually, and also a Secretary of Defense. Because if there's any issues, they handle, keep me out of trouble. So that's how I got here. But yes, it was in the bus.
The bus. The
bus is in front of the Enquirer.
I was going to say, your coffee is amazing, but podcast coffee is apparently made by Alex Coolidge in his desk Keurig.
It's good.
In his New York mug that he brought all the way from New York when he went to Columbia.
Oh, yeah.
That's why I thought you brought your own coffee.
Checker cab or something.
Anyway.
Alex Coolidge coffee.
What do you got for sure?
I did want to talk. There's like a million things we could talk about. But the idea that you've been down there 20 years, you are the enduring restaurant, and you went through hard times with the aftermath of the riots or civil unrest. And you opened in 99. Those were in 2001. And you endured. You didn't close while many others did. And you even opened in a hard time. It's not like, downtown was thriving and then all this happened. It was a very tough time for this city. And can you talk about the changes you've seen, good and bad?
Well, can I give you a little bit of how the Ruby's came to be?
Please.
Absolutely.
So Marvin Rosenberg from Town Properties wants to talk to me. And we had lunch at my favorite restaurant. It was a Thai restaurant right there on between 6th and 7th on Walnut there. It was where the Metropole is now and all those. There was a Thai restaurant there. And so we had lunch. He said, listen, we want to take this Frisch's and turn it into a restaurant. We're doing this backstage district, we're going to call it. And we're going to have this theater, and we'd like you to do it. And I said, where's the business going to come from when there's no show? How many days? Aronoff has two words in it, on and off. It's going to be off more than it's on. So you tell me, where are people going to come from? He says, I don't know. I said, okay. I said, well, the truth of the matter was, I said, I didn't turn it down, but I wanted to, we were opening Las Brisas, our two barge floating resort club at the waterfront every year, and it's only open in the summer. And it was, I think, March or April when he started, you know, it opens like Memorial Day weekend. And he wants me to come up and give him a decision. I said, I fly to Homestead, Florida and pick out palm trees for this place. I hire the bands, the entertainment, the employees. I can't do this right now. I got to get this place open. But, you know, let's talk in a few months. We said, okay. So then I turn on TV one day and he's got Carl Brugemeyer and he's doing it. And so he did it with Carl, and they were partners, and he knew Carl, and they were friends, and Marvin and I were friends at the time. And Neil Boris, who's a partner, is a good friend. So they did it and without me. And it was called Chow Baby. And Chow Baby went from a gold mine to a landmine in a flash. So one day, Marvin is at the waterfront having dinner with Elaine. And my chef comes up to me, said, you know, Marvin's having dinner down there by the windows there. I said, yes, I know. He said, has he talked to you about taking over Chow Baby? Because Chow Baby had closed.
Okay.
And I said, no, but he's just on his appetizer. I'm sure he'll want to talk to me about it, you know. Okay. So sure enough, the waiter comes up to me, says, Mr. Ruby, Mr. Rosenberg would like to talk to you. So I went down, how you doing? I gave Elaine a kiss and Marvin a hug. And he's, you know, they're dear friends. And he said, you interested in Chow Baby? I said, you know, if I ask a girl to the prom and she says no, and then the guy that she was hoping would ask her doesn't ask her. And then she says, well, I'll go with you now. I'll say, the hell with you. Okay, I'm not going to be your second choice. Okay, you wanted to go with Joe Blow. Joe Blow said, forget about it. I'm going with someone else. And now I'm good enough for you. I'm not going to the prom with you. And I says, I'll tell you another thing, Marvin. If you go to the prom, if I go to this prom, you're paying for the prom, you're paying for the limo, you're paying for my tux, you're paying for everything. And I said, but I don't even know if I want to do it, but I love you, but I'll think about it. So then I get thinking about it, and I think, you know, maybe I'll do a really good New York deli. I mean, a real authentic New York deli. I grew up in them, and do it really good. And then I realized, there's only a handful of Jews in this town, and I'm one of them. There's not too many of them in this town that are going to appreciate it, number one. Number two, if you do it right and you buy the right type of corned beef and pastrami and you're doing everything, you've got to charge pretty high price. Yeah. And then what are you going to do at dinner time? And so the New York deli, which is what sometimes I want to do a restaurant like I like. Like, you know, I like Thai food. I mean, maybe I'll do a Thai restaurant. New York deli, you know. And the deli thing wasn't, I didn't think, a good idea. So then I had to decide, well, I've already got the precinct. I've already got the waterfront. What if I did another steakhouse? How would that hurt the other restaurants? And then the other thing was, everybody said downtown was dead. Downtown's dead. They discouraged me from doing it because downtown's dead. Well, if something's dead, there needs to be a body. So I went downtown. I could never find the body. Downtown's dead. Where's this body? There was a funeral for downtown. There's no body. There's no casket. What I did realize, it wasn't dead. It just went to sleep early. It went to bed early. It was tired. So at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, downtown went to sleep. It wasn't dead. It just was, you know, tired and going to bed early and gets up in the morning and you go to first watch and you're okay. But there was nothing going on late. So now I got to decide, you know, and I just walk around downtown and just walk around. Then they gave me the keys to the place because now Chow Baby was vacated and they gave me the key. And I just set up a desk in there and went to work planning and things and what I would do, looking around. And what I did is, you know, there is what I do everywhere. the precinct was Amanda's. It had 52 liens on it, one for each week. When I bought that place, it was Amanda's. There was no business there at all. It was in a horrible, all the homes were boarded up. It was just a dilapidated houses, and it was dangerous, actually. It was a lot of problems with crime with Amanda's, with the guest cars and everything else. But I did that there. I later did it at Carlo and Johnny, which was Chester's Roadhouse, Chester's was across the street, which was Charlie's Crab, and originally, then it was Charlie's Bucket or Charlie's Oyster House or whatever. It was still Charlie, but it was different ownership. And we did Carlo and Johnny, the precinct,
Waterfront,
Jeff Ruby downtown were all places where I try to identify, I think, a place that has potential, but's in the wrong hands, and wait for it to go belly up. And then you get a bargain and wait for it to close. And we did that. And Columbus. Columbus was 7 different restaurants before we did it. So Waterfront was a location everyone passed on. Louisville was a location that everyone passed on. And so forth. And Lexington is a whole different story, which we can get into. But so we decided we're going to make it a steakhouse. And we celebrated our 20th anniversary. And we just celebrated. It was Brittany's idea. I think it was her idea. But, you know, it was, let's not do a promotional thing to make money that it's our 20th anniversary. Let's close the place down and only, it's on a Sunday. It's closed on Sundays. And let's honor the employees that have been there all these years. And well, all the employees, whether they were there at the opening or not. And it was a very expensive event. And it was done right. And our precinct and Carlo and Johnny employees served and cooked for the Jeff Ruby's employees. We gave out awards, a lot of them. And I said to my daughter, I said, that was an incredible event you put together. I mean, what did it cost us? She said, I don't know. That means you don't want to know, Dad, okay?
So Brittany Ruby Miller, your daughter, who is the really runs the day-to-day operation she's the of president. Jeff Ruby Steakhouses.
And so it was a great event for the employees were just so thrilled.
They're the best.
It was a night for them, not for us. It was a night for them.
You have the best servers. And I think today you hear there's so many things coming online all of the time. I think it's very difficult. I mean, it's something I think that is very prevalent right now is if you go to these soft openings and restaurants are opening, the service is really suffering. And do you feel like there can be a shortage of good servers? I mean, you have the best and they don't go anywhere. The same person, people wait on you every time.
I'm working on another book, which will be called The Art of the Meal. And it's going to be about service in America, not just the restaurant, but this is, America is one of the worst of the civilized countries for service. I mean, you ever talk to anyone at Uber if you have a problem? You cannot talk to a human being. It's call 1-800, called the other day.
Or the airlines.
1-800, go to hell is basically the number to call, okay? And whether you can't make a hotel reservation without going through automation, talk to a person, and it goes from there. The first experience is on the phone. We answer the phone and we say, welcome to the precinct. Welcome to Jeff Ruby's when you call. And you deal with a person. But there's very few in this country anymore where it's all recorded stuff.
Well, I mean, that is one of the big parts of Jeff Ruby's and is the top-notch, outstanding service. And you and I have talked about this, so you have this massive – don't you have this massive training manual or this 31
– called The Power of We.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was funny. Carl Linder gave me the line one day talking to me. He said, remember the power of we.
And
I like that. It's the W, not the M, upside down me. It's we. And that became our training manual. And as thick as the yellow pages. And it's I grew up really without parents. And I grew up, the restaurant my mother owned, she owned a few, my stepfather. The employees at those places were my family. They were, whether they were 50 years old or whether they were 30 years old, a lot of Cuban dishwashers, that's where I learned Spanish. It's mostly profanity, but it was
it's
where I learned
helpful.
Spanish. All the people that worked there were my family. And that's why I've treated all my employees ever since I had my own restaurant like family.
And there's a loyalty back to you as well. There's a because you take care of them. And I wanted to ask you that. Are there still – do you still have some employees who are still with you since you started in 99 in downtown?
Well, even before that. Neil Collinsworth was a server assistant at the waterfront. I changed the term busboy to server assistant when I opened the precinct in 81. I didn't want that title anymore. And now the whole industry uses server assistant. But so Neil Collinsworth was a server assistant at the waterfront like in 87 or something. He was a teenager at Scott High School. He's director of operations for the company. He's worked his
He's moved up.
He's worked his way up. But to me, the business is pretty simple. I did not use the word customers when I opened the precinct. I used the words guests. But no matter what business, so you got a business and it's customers, okay? Offer your customers an extraordinary experience and offer your employees an extraordinary opportunity, and you got a pretty good chance of being successful. And that's what we try to do. So my kids aren't the only ones that have climbed the ladder in our company. And they worked in every position, just like Neil did and so many others did. So that's what we do. I hire the smile and I teach the skill. I'm more concerned with the personality of the person. Mm-hmm. And I have like seven criteria before I hire a manager, and everybody knows what those are. And so you'll never be successful unless your employees want you to be. And our employees want us to be. And I thank them. I gave a little speech at that 20th anniversary party that, you know, they've made it. And they've made it. They had to put up with me, too, with all my controversy and going public with, you know, my feelings about full-page ads, whether it was about
let's politics, talk about some of those.
whether it was the streetcar, whether it was probably the OJ thing, everything. Many things I get involved with.
Anthony?
Yeah, that one. OJ, Orlando Justice, that full-page ad.
When I was
OJ.
Thinking about the questions, I was like, favorite guest, worst guest, but I kind of narrowed it down to most memorable guest.
Well, unfortunately, if you're born without a filter, unlike any other part of your body, you can get a donor, you can get a transplant. There is no donor. There's no way to get a filter transplant from somebody. If you're born without a filter, you're born without a filter.
Jason, okay? I'm just kidding.
So I was born without a filter, you know, no different than Donald Trump. Born without a filter.
So you're not a fan of,
there's
by
no
the way.
There's no filter donors out there that are you're gonna get a transplant from somebody.
Has anyone suggested you stay off social media because of it? Are you?
Yeah, my daughter.
Yeah,
my daughter.
Do not listen. Your social media, your Twitter followers.
I didn't know anything about Twitter until Bootsy Collins and Brandon Phillips says you got to get on Twitter.
Okay? Bootsy, all right.
So Bootsy and then Brandon. So I said, Brittany, I want to get on this Twitter. She said, no. Okay. So there was a 2-year hiatus that she wouldn't let me on Twitter because I, like I said, I don't have a filter. And then she let me on, but she and 5 people in corporate have access to my Twitter where they can delete my tweet. So it's filtered.
Ooh,
by
do they
them.
Ever do that?
Huh?
Do they ever do that?
Oh, yeah.
And now you're at 72,000 followers.
Yeah. Yeah. And
it's you. It's you can show your personality in it.
Yeah. But it's, but you know, there's so many good things that have come. You know, I think, giving back to the community, I have met maybe, I don't know, 10 kids on Twitter that I didn't meet them, but I learned about them on Twitter. Somebody tweeted about them, and they're in a hospital that I met for the first time in my life when I visited them in the hospital, or families needing a specialized van for their children that were paralyzed and they didn't have the money, or kids with leukemia, or kids with a brain injury, two, three kids paralyzed. That it was Twitter that I met them on or heard about it on. And I went to Children's Hospital and visited them and brought them macaroni and cheese and whatever. And relationships were started and things that were done that Twitter was responsible for me having the ability to make a positive improvement in someone's life. And it was on Twitter.
Which there's countless stories like that you hear, but you hear them in the community. You hear like the big crimes and you help the crime victims. And so that kind of floats to the top and gets written about it. But if you go out in the community and you know people, it is these smaller things that mean so much to the people involved. And it's just these personal stories that are told about you.
The problem is I get these messages that on Twitter that I can look at even if they don't follow me, or DMs if they do follow me and I follow them back. Maybe 10 a day requests, sometimes just for my time to give them advice. I just got one before I walked in here. Somebody's daughter is 12 years old and she wants to be a baker, and how can I get myself build a bake shop for her and still have a place in the house where we, all these kinds of, you know, good things and great parents, but they want advice. And it takes a lot of time to do what I do in my life and still, you know, try to accommodate all these requests when you get so many every day.
But I think that's part of who you are too. You seem so accessible. Like it's the That's So Cincinnati podcast, and you are very much that. And you're a celebrity in this city and in the country. People know who you are, but yet you're a real person and you just talk to real people like real people when they see you.
Yeah, I'm emotionally honest. I'm unfiltered, but I am real with everybody. Dishwashers, homeless people walking by talking to me. My office is on the cigar patio downtown here.
And it is. I see you sitting there a lot.
And I don't know how many people come over and start talking to me. And I just try. I try to talk to everybody and be nice. And you know, even if they're asking for money, and sometimes. You know, I do, and sometimes I don't, but but a lot of them just want to say hello and thank you for what you do in the community, and it's all kinds of people, young, old, male, female, white, black, it doesn't matter. They're just so nice, or they stop by in the car and at a red light yell out at me, and most of the times it's good stuff they yell out. But
you said you were born without a filter, and that
I was
your...
born without a filter and a father.
And that is, that's part of your brand, is that you call it like you see it. Like we said in this thing, you're still telling it like it is. Is there any time when you've ever thought twice or regretted saying something in for fear that it could hurt your business?
Well, I'd rather live without some customers by expressing how I really feel about things that are important than have to live with myself by not doing that. That's what I'm saying. And that gets you in trouble. I've had death threats so many times. I mean, it was the Drew Peterson case. I had death threats before I ever left for Joliet. And I had death threats after the OJ thing. I had death threats with the Donald Trump thing. I always have death threats. Death threats.
You are a committed Republican, and you don't hide that.
Well,
you have been very critical of Donald Trump.
Well,
why
the
is
one,
that?
The only thing I wanted and was for him. I got a friend. Number one, John McCain. Forget whether he's a Republican or Democrat. Forget whether you like him politically or whatever. Okay, what he did and sacrificed as a prisoner of war. And what he could have left but wouldn't leave until his comrades were all allowed to leave.
True
and
American
what he
hero.
Suffered, okay, and to disparage him and defame him and say, well, I like the ones that weren't captured. Anybody can get captured, whatever he said. That, now, You got the Maupin, okay? Matt Maupin. Remember him?
Oh, yeah.
I do, yep.
And Keith, when he was displayed by the Taliban, I think it was, he had that floppy hat on. He was in, he was being displayed live for I don't know, a year on TV as propaganda. And then eventually was killed. And then it was like, I don't know, a year or so later, they found his remains and brought his body back. I didn't know Matt, but I wanted to befriend, I wanted to be there for his family. And I didn't know how to get there. And I drove myself way out into the boondocks to where I thought
Claremont County, right?
Yeah, way out there. And there he was, Matt Maupin, excuse me, Keith Maupin.
Yeah, his dad.
And his ex-wife in his little, very humble, modest home with the pictures of their two sons. And I just wanted to console him. And he and I become dear friends.
To this day, you still?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I have an event, I invite him. When he has an event, he invites me. And he's a dear friend. And to me, I thought that disgraced and defamed someone, his son, to say prisoners of war are not heroes. The ones that are captured are not heroes. The heroes are the ones that aren't captured or whatever. Wow. I mean, the kid was 19 years old or 20 years old. You know, and he lost his life serving this country. So I sent out a tweet. I said, apologize before you come if you're thinking of coming into this restaurant in Louisville. It was his first appearance in Louisville during his campaign when he was running. And so, but you know what? When he came to town, Keith Maupin was there in the front row. The first time he came to Cincinnati, and he spoke to Keith Maupin. And I had gotten that message. Nice. I had gotten that message to the Hamilton County Sheriff, and yes, I'm a Republican, but I care more about what's right than the right or the left, you know, and both parties have a long way to go. But so Keith Maupin felt better.
Good.
Okay, so everything's fine.
Yeah, I had not heard that story before. I'm not sure. Yeah. Wow. Also, as long as we're talking about the president, it has been widely reported that he likes to put ketchup on his steak. Where do you stand on that?
Well, I think Jim Harbaugh does that too, doesn't he? And he drinks, you know, and he drinks milk with it. But listen, I'm not going to talk about the president. The economy's good, and we'll see what happens. I don't want to talk about the president.
I can tell you this:
I was very involved.
What about ketchup on steaks? Yeah, no,
we don't have A1 sauce in our restaurants.
Are there more expansions coming?
Well, we have an opportunity in Las Vegas, but we got to weigh that opportunity and whether or not it's we can do it this soon. It's a huge development in Vegas. Huge, probably the biggest one, and so we're weighing that opportunity, but there's nothing planned right now.
Do you get that from a lot of developments around?
Yeah.
You know, asking you to bring your brand there.
Yeah.
But this goes back to the commitment to excellence on service. And this is where I think you and I have talked about this before. You are very, very, very methodical and thought out about how you expand and where you expand. You don't want to expand so fast. Yeah. Is that because then you potentially can compromise
that? The more restaurants
you
have, the more quality slips.
Yep.
You know, and these chain, you know, a lot of these, especially if you go upscale. I mean, if you're McDonald's or Wendy's, it's a corporate structure. It's easier to follow. But when you start getting into fine dining and you try to expand or do upscale steakhouses in 50 cities and your quality, you can't.
So Ruby's is, it's a special, it's a special experience. It's like my wife and I, we there for a while. We were going every year on our anniversary, and you know, I know you have a lot of celebrities that come in, but really, if you are a customer at a like you are treated like a celebrity, no matter who you are. And I remember this. I remember tweeting like we were at Jeff. You know, I was just excited. We were at Jeff Ruby's, and I kid you not. You mentioned Neil Collinsworth within seconds of my tweeting that, he comes over with a mini bottle of champagne, courtesy of Mr. Ruby. And I'm like, and it was like, it just felt, you just, and I'm sure you've done that hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times for just anyone. And you just, it just felt so special.
Well,
but that's how you are with all your customers.
Well, you know, the location's important. The restaurant designer's important. The chef's important. The thing that's most as important is to make your guests feel most important. And that's trumps everything. You know, the guests come in there and they feel like they're treated like they're the most important guest in that restaurant.
Yep.
Like they're a celebrity, like they're getting special treatment. You got to do that for everybody, you know, and, you know, we want everyone to come out of there, feeling like they got their money's worth, especially being expensive, you know. And they digest the ambience with every bite of food and with every sip of wine. And part of the ambience is our staff.
Yep.
And you got financial resources, you got physical resources, you got human resources. Your human resources are your most crucial asset. They're the most important people. And we treat them like family. We've been paying all their hospitalization from day one.
Wow.
You know, I don't know, Obamacare or if Obama doesn't care, it didn't matter. Mm-hmm. You know, we had insurance for our employees. Everyone, dishwasher.
So I did think that we could also, since that you are so unfiltered, that we could go through news of the day and kind of get your thoughts on some of these things that we've been talking about and that Jason's been writing about. You good with that?
And Sherry's been writing about.
No, I'll try to answer what I can. You know, like I said.
We know you'll be honest.
I'll be honest. Like I said, I'm emotionally honest and it gets me in trouble. So let's see. Throw me a pitch I can hit. Throw me a slider. Throw me a pitch over the plate I can hit.
The Bengals, should they stay or go?
What's your next question? Well,
he's adjusting in the chair.
I need something in this coffee.
He needs more coffee. He needs something in it.
I think that, first of all, they're not going anywhere. So it's a subject that's, they're not going anywhere. Just like, you know, the Reds were leaving town, remember that scare that the Reds were leaving? Come on.
I do remember
I
that.
Called it Marge Madness every April. Every baseball season, I called it Marge Madness. The Reds aren't going anywhere. The Bengals aren't going anywhere. They're staying. Okay. And you know, so whether they win or lose, you know, they're not these teams, especially NFL, you know, anybody has a business. If they don't put out a quality product where everyone is happy or most people are happy when they leave, they're out of business. The NFL doesn't matter whether you win or lose.
That's exactly right.
It does not matter. You're going to make millions no matter what your record is. You're sharing with the attendance from other teams and other states. You're getting part of their attendance when you visit. There's no way you can lose money.
Well, is there an obligation?
And if you win, it costs you more money.
But should here's another question. This is more political. Should the county do what it did last time for them and just essentially write them a blank check?
No, it's taxpayers. I remember when they had blackouts.
In TV blackouts.
Yeah.
Yep. In NFL.
And here's all these Cincinnatians that can't afford. I talked to a person the other day that works for me. He's got a family. He makes pretty good money.
Mm-hmm.
Can't afford to go to a Bengals game. When you take your kids and the whole thing, the whole experience, it's expensive.
Yes, it is.
And you know, you got other bills, so you know you got to put like anything else. You got to put aside what can discretionary income. What can I do this? So they NFL blacks out if they're not sold out. And then one day, Jeff Birding, who was with the Bengals at the time, asked me if I'd buy 100 tickets to help fill the thing so they can broadcast the game.
And it's always the unspoken secret that that happens a lot. Yeah,
so I bought 100 tickets. Now, I already had a season suite. I had a $100,000+ suite there. Mm-hmm. So I bought 100 tickets and gave them to the military people. Okay, I wanted it earmarked for veterans or current military people and people in the armed forces. So we got that 100. And then when I did it, I think Kroger and somebody else came after me. I know Kroger was another big company, whether it was PNC. So after I did 100 and then it got out and then it was on Twitter and then whatever it was, then the other. So then they got them sold out and then they broadcast the game. And I wrote something about that. I said, well, how can you be that greedy, and not let people that paid for that stadium, that can't afford to go to that stadium, and they can't even watch their home team.
Yeah.
That's not just in Cincinnati. That's everywhere. And that just isn't right. And the NFL eventually is now
they made the right decision.
Blackout. But next question.
What do you think about our riverfront development? Jason's been a little critical of it. I'm not sure. I'll let you describe it. But, I mean, what do you think about it?
Which one? Which riverfront development? The concert
banks.
Thing or the...
Well, the banks
the overall
in general.
Banks. What are your thoughts on it?
The city of Cincinnati, if it were a football team, would, on fourth and goal from the 2-yard line, every time, whether it was 10 times a game, no matter what the score... They would go for the field goal. They just don't want to take the chance at getting a touchdown. Okay, so like the Cowboys did the other day, right? They went and they failed. So on fourth and two, if the city of Cincinnati was a football team, they would go for the field goal from the 4th-and-1-yard line, 4th and goal. They would just say, let's just get a field goal. And the city keeps kicking field goals. And Indianapolis keeps scoring touchdowns. And Columbus keeps scoring touchdowns. And Louisville and Lexington. And all of them. And what do they have is a metro government, number one, which...
I think that's going to be a big talk.
Makes a big
up
difference.
Here.
Yep.
And this city does not have that. So this city, the county fights with the city. The city fights with the city. The text and they got the whole... what do you call it?
Textgate.
The family of five, whatever that was called.
Gang of five.
The gang of five. Okay. So anyway, this city is just is going to keep and feel. The banks, I mean, you ever try the housing
and actually
there,
missing
the,
some of those.
The walls are paper thin. You can't live there because the noise. You got 92 bars. You got a stadium right there. You're going to have, you're going to have huge parties out there. The whole place is a party scene. It's a
tourist trap.
Right? But it's all partying and everything else. And meanwhile, there was no thought to insulate the apartments and maybe so people could get a little bit of sleep or be able to not hear all that crap. They did everything like that. And by the way, it was all bars,
It
was all bars. There was nothing else conceived from the band.
The music venue, the fix
other than
to
bars.
It?
And the and you already got Riverbend, and you got that arena downtown that's where the money should be. That should be where the money goes. A convention center hotel, so maybe you can do some conventions here. We can't compete with conventions. We're not getting out of town people to come here and spend money. And you talk about creating jobs and people living here making more money. You got conventions. You got residents that are going to benefit from it. And we don't get the conventions.
Fortunately, it appears as if we're getting a new convention hotel.
So,
which is really good for your business too, I would think.
You need a marquee, world-class hotel with 1,000 rooms. World-class in Cincinnati is an oxymoron. It's just not.
Goes back to your kicking field goals on fourth and one. Fourth and goal.
You remember when they built the Red Stadium there and had that entrance, that walkway up to the concourse there from the street, and it was all crooked and slanted? I took a picture. I said, and this is what we're showing the world. come to Cincinnati, and it was that whole crooked slanted roof, and it was all, it was for years, it's, and this is after you opened the new stadium. It wasn't addressed, but we just...
Well, it is where we're at with the arena. It looks terrible. They took the name off of it, and now it looks like a ghost arena on top of all of its previous problems.
Before I would do an outdoor concert venue, I'd make that arena... An arena that, number one, could do concerts. Could bring Final Fours into this town. Could bring conventions in this town. We don't do anything. You know, it's like, this city's a nice place to live, but I wouldn't want to visit it.
You know what your damn problem is, Jeff? You're making too much sense. And when it comes to common sense...
Common sense isn't very common anymore.
No, anyway, it's not.
Listen, we all make mistakes. We've all screwed up, but... I would love to see this, because the thing about this city that's the best is the people that live here.
Absolutely.
The people live here are
definitely
wonderful. They're responsible for any success I have, and they deserve better, you know? And it's a great place to live.
Were you ever approached about a restaurant at the Banks?
Yeah. Years ago, I was Nick Lachey and I talked about maybe doing one. And actually, they went with Crave. And that's not there.
Look where
now.
That's at now.
And that's
nowhere.
Not there now. I wouldn't do a fine dining restaurant there, but the, you know, and there's some good places there that do a good job, you know. And Holy Grail is just hitting it out of the park. Of
course, Moorland Lager House is great.
Of course, if you hit it out of the park, you hit the Holy Grail.
Like, that's how close it is. It's a good location.
So, but they do a good job. There's a lot of places, Christian World. But there needs to be more diverse attractions than just, 100 bars. And the residential is, they got the hotel now, and they got GE there now, and that's good. So
need some condos for people to put down roots. And
what the city needs, in my opinion, is an expanded convention center. You cannot expand the convention center until you have a hotel that will be able to accommodate convention goers. So that's a two-headed monster. You've got to have an expanded convention center, but first you got to have a hotel. This is not a city with a lot of good hotels or big. It certainly can't handle big conventions. And I was at a fundraiser there the other day for the Pink Ribbon, and I was talking to the head of the convention center, and we talked about it, and they want to put a couple boutique hotels, and that doesn't help, a couple of small boutique hotels. You need a good 1,000-plus room hotel right there by that convention center. Then you can expand the convention center. We need residential, in my opinion, and we need to do something with that arena to draw. A city like this, you know, this city did not have cameras, security cameras downtown until I got involved. Didn't even have a security camera. Until my son got mugged and chased down the street at 2 a.m. with 4 guys with guns. And I said, well, let's look at the cameras and see. Oh, we have no cameras. Downtown Cincinnati had no cameras. And when that happened, I said, what about all these employees that are working at these places and people going to these bars downtown and restaurants, and they got to walk who knows how far to get their car, and there's not a camera, and everyone in the city, every criminal knows there's no camera downtown Cincinnati. And I met with Dave Ginsburg, the mayor, the chief of police. We had meetings back then about it, and now they got a whole bunch of cameras. They didn't even have cameras in this downtown, let alone a hotel to hold conventions.
Sherry, you have any other questions?
I think we have to ask. We're running a little bit long.
I don't even know
what
this question is.
Streetcar. Where are you at on it right now?
Runs right by Jeff Ruby's downtown.
Yeah. Well,
7th and Walnut.
I remember I had a fundraiser for cancer. There's about 1,200 people there. Celebrities came in. Nick Lachey, Brian Kelly, Chris Collinsworth, Brett Mesberger emceed it. It was actually played on TV. And Mark Mallory couldn't make it. And I liked Mark. So I said, well, I'm sorry. The mayor, I think Michael Douglas did it over satellite. Governor Kasich did it over satellite. He roasted me, but Mark wasn't there. So he might've done it on satellite. I said, well, the reason Mark's not here is he's working on that sequel, that Marlon Brando movie, and it's going to be called A Streetcar Named Disaster. And, of course, the original movie, which was an award-winning, Oscar-winning movie, The Streetcar Named Desire. So that's when I got that out. It was long before The Streetcar
came out. Won you a lot of fans on Twitter, I'm sure.
And yeah, my daughter wouldn't let me tweet anything about it. She said, "Dad, you're not getting it. Do not tweet it." And so I didn't tweet it, okay? But it wasn't, it didn't make sense. When you have so much need for residential, you have so much need for that arena we were talking about, you have so much need for a convention center that can compete, you know, you can't bring, you know, how do you sell the city to conventioneers when you don't even have security cameras downtown, when you don't have
a hotel for them to have,
you know, and you know, and the streetcar, as far as I'm concerned, should be free and let it just go and then see what happens. And Cincinnati Bell advertised on there. Maybe Taco Bell will advertise on there. So,
or maybe they'll close it down and save face.
They're not closing it down, Jason.
But it wasn't. It was a lot of money that is, you know, and you only have so much money. You know what Warren Buffett said? You get so many darts to throw at an object to try to hit the bullseye, use them on the ones that are worth it, you know. Throw those darts at the right targets.
Isn't that the truth?
And I guess it's if it was Warren Buffett or it was Bill Gates, it was close, one or the other. And I paraphrase whatever, however they said it.
Jeff, this has been great. Congratulations on 20 years of downtown Jeff Ruby's. Actually, you know what? I do have one more question. I know you have tried to do this many times, and it's been starts and stops and frustrations. Will the waterfront ever come back?
The next time I want to be floating on water is on an inner tube in a pool somewhere.
Yeah.
And I just saw what happened over at
the Bromley Yacht Club.
Yeah.
Hit by a barge.
Happened to you.
It happened. When we were under construction, which was right over there in Ludlow, we built on the river there, we were hit by runaway barges as soon as we got the steel on the damn thing before we ever moved it to Covington. When we moved it to Covington, when we had the big launch, the maiden voyage, and we brought it down. Well, the day that we were going to bring it down, 13 runaway barges hit that spot where we were going to land.
Jeez.
Or we were going to moor.
The flooding.
We missed that. We were hit by a runaway barge on New Year's Eve. I had to evacuate. On Labor Day, I got a call at 4 in the morning from Mike Zicka. He said, "Jeff, I think you need to get over here." He says, "I got a boat over here." He says, "Your security guard, who was a Barney Fife type, we had a security guard." He says, "But I know to take what he says with a grain of salt, but I think he might be right. I think you're sinking." So I get there about 5 in the morning, and all the crews are there, all the TV crews. Las Brisas, which I mentioned earlier,
yeah,
had sunk. And when it was being built, there was some PVC piping that somebody did not caulk. And you have, 1,000 boats out there creating wakes over that weekend. And little by little, it got into that hole. And eventually, now when it's sunk, there's a rock formation on there, you know, like from the scene at Scarface, where I got the idea from, was the same company that built that in Scarface at the Fountain Blue, that rock formation with the waterfalls and the bar in the pool and all of that. And the lagoon. That thing's in the underwater. The whole thing tilted over and knocked out all the windows of the dining room that didn't get affected. The main barge that had the restaurant knocked out all the cantilevered windows. So, and it sank. So that, fortunately, nobody was hurt. Nobody was there. New Year's Eve, I evacuated everybody. there have been quite a few other times. Okay, then we got hit by an iceberg when we were going to be under construction, and we were going to take the existing waterfront. I had already bought another barge, and we were going to move it all to Covington Landing. One of my guys almost got killed. He was on the barge when it happened. Then we move it over to Hebron over there to be safe in a harbor there and docked by those people there and guarded, right? Then it sunk there.
Oh, jeez.
Okay. So
this is the only way. This has been like 3 years ago.
It's been hit on, shit on, and sunk 5 or 6 times. And no, to answer your question,
it's hard to argue with all that.
Not if it's floating. You know, it's floating on the river. I fought the river, and the river won. Every time I fought the river,
Time. Jeff, thanks. This is the bus driver's waiting for you. And always, always great talking to you. Always enjoy our conversations. I know this goes without saying, but keep telling it like it is. So thank you, Jeff.
Well, I appreciate it. I like reading your articles, and you're just as opinionated as me, but you can afford to be. I don't know if I should be.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks to Jeff Ruby. You know what Jeff Ruby is? He's
so Cincinnati.
Just want to make sure Phil is awake back there after that long Jeff Ruby interview. Thank you, Jeff. Thanks to Jeff Ruby and his company for setting that up. And he came in style on the bus.
He did. He parked it in front of the Inquirer. People kept kind of filtering back, and they're like, oh, is Jeff Ruby here? And you're like, well, how did you know that? If the bus is outside.
Yes, you can't miss the bus. It is incredibly Jeff Ruby. It is enormous, and it has Jeff Ruby Steakhouse logo right on the side of it. And it is this bigger, that big, brash brand that is Jeff Ruby, and nothing could really personify that more than that big freaking bus.
And you know, and you, I kind of looked at it, and it's like, you know what, this is so Jeff Ruby. But you know what, I was talking to his driver, and he said that he was worried about getting a ticket. So really, he's no different than any one of us. Could you imagine giving the bus a ticket? I don't know about that. That seems like that's quite the parking ticket.
That was quite the interview, Sherry. I can't remember. What did you say? What your favorite Jeff Ruby's restaurant is?
There was a lot going on in that interview. I'm a downtown person. You know, pre-Jack, Alex and I would go there. We'd sit at the bar. We'd split a steak, like after work, when we didn't have to worry about running home and all kind of things. And I'm loyal to it. I love Potatoes Anna. The jelly beans when you walk in. It's classic in there. I love it.
As I mentioned, I like the precinct. It's low-key. It's, you know, a little out of the city, of course. And like the downtowns, it's dark and it's got that steakhousey feel to it. And you know, but it's that old building and literally the old police precinct. And I just love it. I love the atmosphere and obviously the food and the service. And
you know, and there's still the restaurants that we go to. Like my birthday's coming up and we're going to go to Jeff Ruby's for it. There's a million amazing restaurants now. Our food scene has just exploded. I mean, since the time that I've lived here and these 20 years that this downtown has gone through, there's many, many choices down there. But you can just... There's no experience like the Jeff Ruby's fine dining experience. And so it's hard to keep up with those restaurants, but you go back to a classic like Jeff Ruby's.
I mean, restaurants come and go. Jeff Ruby's has endured, and it's endured because of its commitment to the top-notch service. And Jeff's, I mean, he's a perfectionist. And his perfectionism when it comes to treating every single guest in there like kings and queens and, you know, that's why Jeff Ruby's has endured and now grown, and now other cities are getting to experience this. And I think it'll be interesting to see, as he alluded on the interview, whether it seems like Jeff Ruby's is perfect for Las Vegas.
Oh, totally. So,
let's see if that happens. I know he mentioned, he's incredibly, incredibly particular about where he's opening restaurants, and he is hands-on. He doesn't want to become this enormous restaurant where he doesn't even have his hand on whether this place opens in
I don't know, somewhere in, you know, New York or Atlanta, and you start seeing him everywhere, and it gets to be too big where he can't be intimately involved in every single detail. And so I think it'll be interesting to see if he can do, if the Vegas and Jeff Ruby can make this happen.
I mean, I feel like we're going to have to go cover that, right?
Oh, absolutely.
The opening of it.
That's definitely a two-reporter trip right there. You got
and Polly, we'll bring Polly.
And bring Polly, and, you know, we got to bring a photographer
Phil.
Burl let us do that one, Phil. Making sure Phil was awake.
He is today.
Anything else for Sherry before we jump out of here?
I don't.
Thanks again to Jeff Ruby. Thanks again for all your feedback and listening, and we will catch you next week.